So what do Alyssa Milano, Jack Dorsey, hackers, and Tunisia have in common? If you don't know the answer, then you're just like the many of us that haven't read The Hacktivist yet. So get online or walk into one of these bookstores that have a great collection of graphic novels and pick up a copy of The Hacktivist. Conceived by Alyssa Milano. Yep, that Alyssa Milano, the one who used to be in Who's the Boss, and lots of sketchy vampire movies, came up with this idea back in 2013, and supported by Jack Dorsey. And for those of you that don't know who Jack Dorsey is, please come out from under the rock, or I may as well tell you that he is one of the few people who could probably head up or be the CEO of $2 billion companies. So he is the CEO currently of Twitter, as well as of Square, the payments processing company, and happens to be somebody that launched his startup at South by Southwest, which we actually went to just a while back in Austin. In any case, so it's an all-star cast over at The Hacktivist, and the story is very much about misinformation, disinformation, regime change, hackers, and has been drawn up with an incredible amount of detail by the team that has written and drawn it. Masterfully drawn up by Canadian artist Marcus Tu, the book Hacktivist starts off with an explosive scene in Tunisia. And fortunately for all of us, they got the flag right. So I think we can learn quite a lot about the storytelling right from the get-go. There's this great juxtaposition of Middle Eastern locale with revolution brewing versus the clinical colors of corporate America. Milano does a great job of creating a story here with that tension between those two worlds and also between characters. She tells us that one of the main heroes of the book, Ed, who happens to be called Ed Hickox, is actually inspired by Jack Dorsey, who I mentioned earlier. And that's why we have sort of a prologue written by Jack Dorsey himself for the book. So I can't help but wonder if Milano thought that by celebrating Jack Dorsey's character, she may actually make this graphic novel more appeal to the tech bro community, whether it be in Silicon Valley or anywhere else in the world that Jack Dorsey has a following. But it doesn't look like that had much of an effect on its take-up and readership, because you didn't exactly hear about it in TechCrunch or any of the mainstream tech media news. However, it was promoted quite extensively at Comic-Con and, of course, in California, where Milano did a lot of the book signings and comic stores, etc. At least that's what I can tell from all the coverage online. In any case, coming back to the story, you do have a bunch of tech bros, and that's Ed and Nate, who have created a technology company, a billion-dollar technology company called Your Life. And Your Life feels a bit like Facebook in how all-pervasive it is. I know just the other day we had a friend of mine come up to me and said, hey, I'm getting off of Facebook. And I reminded them that they were also on WhatsApp messaging me, and that WhatsApp also belongs to Facebook, as does Instagram. So Your Life kind of feels like that in the story, where they're just everywhere. And so as the story progresses, what's interesting is that you see founders that seem to have started something with one thing in mind, and that's slowly morphing into something that is well beyond their control. And of course, there is this backdrop of how technology is simply a tool, as Jack Dorsey mentions in the prologue, and how you use the tool depends on the user. And so that's the scary thing, I guess, about technology and having technology that's so pervasive and is able to have such influence in the world today, that if it falls into the wrong hands, then what's it capable of? And that's kind of where the story takes us, with getting a peek at how technology can play a role in destabilizing regimes and having massive social impact across countries. You sort of hear the Arab Spring through the story. I think for the most part, find the storytelling to be quite authentic in how they portray the Middle East. There's a lot of use of Arabic, all the way from the details of graffiti on walls to actual usage in the lettering, which I thought was very, very, very realistic in terms of the actual exchange of dialogue between characters. So it's really worth a quick read. This is a two-part hardback series, mini-series, I think is what it was referred to. And originally, I think it came in a set of four. So I'm recommending that you guys get out there and start to read the story that's been written by Jackson Lansing and Colin Kelly, and colored in by Ian Herring. Great work on the coloring, by the way, especially again how the coloring allows us to keep those two different scenes and destinations, whether it's the Middle East or North America, so separate in our imagination, and does such a brilliant job of coloring in the characters as well. So get ready for Milano's masterpiece. So one of the things that impresses me a lot about The Hacktivists is the fact that there is so much accurate use of information around technology and around hacking, as well as infrastructure, and then the accuracy of the actual locations. I mean, this has been masterfully researched. And just a few examples that I would give you is, you know, small things like talking about a black hat, you know, hacking collective. So the vernacular is very, very exact. And they talk about how save yourself, which is the, I guess, the equivalent of anonymous. And if you don't know who anonymous are, then I would give the words anonymous and hacker collective a quick Google, and you'll probably find yourself very quickly slipping down a rabbit hole of just a massive amount of information online. In any case, I think that the use of technology and its enabling infrastructure is very well described throughout the comic book, and you have some fairly gender-busting roles shown here as well. So I'm a big fan of that, with one of the lead instigators being a woman. I also thought that, again, having been to Tunisia once before, having been to Tunis, it is a fairly French-speaking country, and the mix of Arabic and French is quite unique to that country. And again, you see that coming across really well on the pages. So we also get to see how the authors have tried to bring out accents, and I really enjoy that bit. I enjoy how the lettering and the actual spellings make it feel like the characters sound different than the others. So you'll find quite a lot of that over here as well. Then there's the matter of how people could actually get disconnected from the internet, or could actually get a signal from Wi-Fi and get connected and be able to exact operations through just a Wi-Fi connected internet. So there's a lot, I think, to think about from a technology perspective. I think there is also the whole sort of concept of a municipal hacking, sort of the information security analyst's worst nightmare. And I think the thing that most governments, local governments, municipal governments dread and fear and hope never happens, that their networks get taken over by a bad actor, which may be a foreign state or a group of hackers. Now, we know for a fact that there's many countries with cyber capability that could actually execute such attacks, and we know for a fact that some of those attacks have been well documented in the news. So I'll talk about that perhaps in another recording shortly. But the scenario where the municipality is actually hacked is quite realistic, again, in terms of how they can get into infrastructure. And you see it in the movies where hackers take over, let's say, anything from a network of traffic lights to, let's say, power plants, etc. I think all of that, especially in a lower tech enabled infrastructure country like Tunisia, seem quite realistic. And the hacktivists, which is a nice play on hacker and activist sort of melded together, are hell-bent on making sure that they can not necessarily free the oppressed, because this isn't kind of the typical Western, let us free you kind of movement, but rather it's about helping people help themselves. So I think there was some degree of cultural sensitivity here that was employed, not to make it sound too culturally ethnocentric, of a North American sort of mission to free the oppressed third world. But rather, I think this is much more focused on how technology can be used as a tool to liberate the masses and provide information that can then result in this avalanche of collective action. So I hope that you're going to delve deeper into that and keep a watch for all of that technical detail that I just mentioned. There really is just so much of that. And one last thing I think I'd mention is that there's this wonderful sort of page where they show a whole bunch of mainstream media coverage. And what I loved especially was that there was a cover of Wired magazine with Nate and Ed, the main two characters, on it. And, there was a San Francisco Chronicle that was slightly cut off, so you can't really see the San Fran, and also a New York Times that had been reworded to not exactly read as New York Times, but super, super fun to see all of those publications up on a wall trying to showcase how big a deal Nate and Ed are. And of course, that really resonates again with the technology community, because if you've made it onto the cover of Wired, then which we know Jack Dorsey has done before, then you really have done something special in that world. So there's this one page about towards the beginning of the graphic novel where you see Nate and Ed coming out of the Your Life building. And what I thought was particularly interesting was that they had these captions next to the characters talking about, what their roles are and what their net worths are. And, they talk about Nate as the CEO of Your Life and say that he's 31 years old, which I think based on popular technology culture today is actually sort of the median age of being a tech founder, although generally in Silicon Valley, they tend to be a lot younger. And he's shown as having a net worth of $8.7 billion. Now, that's pretty on the money, no pun intended, for the kind of billionaire playboy that you want to project onto the graphic novel. It's a bit Tony Stark meets Jack Dorsey. And of course, his co-founder, I mean, this is where the reality sets in, the guy who's the CIO, or really, I think they should have called him the CTO, and that's Ed Hickox, is in his late 20s, so he's about 28, and they show his net worth is slightly lower than that of Nate at $5.3 billion. So there you have it, folks, the inequity between the two co-founders, where one's shares are probably worth more than the other. And again, you have the CEO business guy who seems to be worth more than the technology guy, reminiscent a bit of the Steve Jobs Wozniak relationship, though I believe, unfortunately, the Woz was worth even a lot less. So that's something to, I guess, watch out for, is how the story progresses. And there's a great deal of layering with respect to the introspection that both characters do in terms of their journey, in terms of how they're feeling about the contributions they've made to society, and what the general responsibility of building a company of that scale really is and what it means to them. I think what the reader really takes away is this feeling that, I guess, when you're at the pinnacle of Maslow's hierarchy, then there has to be something greater. They feel like they need to do something more with what they've made. And so that sort of goes throughout the whole storyline. And of course, you have a bit of that government agent sneaking in and infiltrating their organization, sort of taking it over, and what that really looks like. I guess potentially every tech founder's worst nightmare, because so many people within the technology industry pride themselves in that their organizations respect the privacy of data. And yet here you have a story where it seems almost like the government has breached the most sacred of all perimeters, which is the data of all the users of your life. But in fact, I think what has long been accepted is that the security apparatus of most countries is able to go through the data of users that are using the system. And a great example of that would be the whole concern that North America has shown around TikTok and ByteDance, the company that owns TikTok, and how its data could be accessed by the state in China. And then, of course, likewise, anybody who's sort of using US software is most likely being read through by the US intelligence services. So it seems highly plausible, obviously, that you could have a situation where, through some sort of executive order, organizations that have access to very sensitive data, much like your life, could be served notice that the government needs their service. Is kind of the equivalent, I guess, of an FBI agent needing to take over somebody's car because they're pursuing a suspect. I'm not sure if that's something that is real beyond the movies, but certainly feels like the network or the company your life is hijacked, and then what ensues after once the government is in control is super interesting, and I'm not going to spoil that for you. But other than the story, I think the visuals are also really enjoyable, and you get a real flair for the international, because you do see everything from California to London to Tunisia to just a whole bunch of different locations which are important in telling the story. And also, I guess this whole concept of one of the founders, and I'm not going to tell you who goes a bit off the rails and sort of disappears. And then, of course, plots a comeback. So have a read, explore, and appreciate the value of a well-told story that does a difficult but, I think, exceptional job of cutting across cultures and still maintaining the storyline in a really tightly knit storyboarding format. And the art is thoroughly enjoyable, despite the fact that I think the shadings of the oranges or the hues of the blue as a result of all of that screen time, and I gotta say there's a lot of blue screen action in this particular graphic novel, somehow the artists and the letterers keep us so gripped with the story that we manage to get over all of that and really enjoy this coming of age story of what technology could do to help an entire nation rise up and free itself. So tune in to The Hacktivist and let me know what you think.